To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Holy smokes, Batman. It's Gaggle of Geeks with...
Blake Howard.
And Sophie Lai.
Good morning, Blake Howard of Graffiti with Punctuation.
Good morning, Soph. Good morning, geeks. What a beautiful geeky Saturday it is today.
It's a gorgeous geeky Saturday, and it's our last gaggle of geeks for the year.
The last one.
For the year.
Oh, my gosh.
What are we doing? Oh, my goodness.
And look, what a good one to go out on.
I know, right?
What we're about to talk about. This is, I couldn't be happier with where we're going with this.
Right. It's Geek Christmas pretty much.
Yeah. A very early Christmas present because, ladies and gentlemen, Rian Johnson's little independent movie, Star Wars The Last Jedi, has finally come and hit cinemas this week. If you're lucky enough to catch a midnight screening on Wednesday evening / Thursday morning, you've already seen it. And it is the sequel to the J.J. Abrams' new Star Wars trilogy, The Force Awakens. We kick off literally right at the very end of the last movie. Mm-hmm. Rey has found Luke Skywalker and the Resistance / the Rebels. Everyone just calls them Rebels. Rebels! The Rebels are escaping their base because the First Order is pissed that their Starkiller base was destroyed, and they are coming after these guys hard. So we're joining them right at the end, and they're coming for them. And what it leads into is Rey trying to discover a little bit more about the Jedi Order, find out why Luke Skywalker has left the building, so to speak. And the First Order is literally trying to wipe every living soul who is resisting off of the map so that they are distant memory. And that is where we start our tale.
Indeed, and what a tale it is, and what a beautiful continuation from two very different directors.
Yeah, look, J.J. Abrams, I would like to say he fostered the myth. There's a great writer named Walter Chaw who wrote a review of The Force Awakens so far, and one line that he wrote in there is that Star Wars is the most revered myth in U.S. culture. You know, if the Greeks have got tales of
Homer.
Greek gods and Apollo and whatnot, and the Romans sort of capitalized on that sort of foundation mythology, Star Wars is American mythology. And so J.J. Abrams, I find, he kind of helped us feel like those myths were there again. Everything was mythical. And Rian Johnson did the perfect thing. What do you need to do with myths? You smash them. you take these foundational myths and you make them real. And that is really the genius of George Lucas's original trilogy. He made mythical characters and these mythical archetypes. He did the hero's journey with Luke Skywalker in A New Hope. And, you know, Empire Strikes Back. And a lot of people are going to compare this as the middle film. Everyone wants to know where any movie sits alongside Empire Strikes Back. But the great thing that George Lucas did at the time was he smashed his own myths. He took away this big, bad black character and made him a father and made it intimate, made it about family.
Mm.
And so, look, Star Wars The Last Jedi does absolutely everything that I could have hoped for and more. Personally, it's easily the best non-original trilogy Star Wars film. Rogue One is garbage. Let's stop talking about it. The Force Awakens is an incredible kickstart, but Rian Johnson gets exactly what this franchise needed to do, and it has all the echoes, it has the similar relationships, it knows what we were expecting, and it gives it to us for a moment, and then it just pulls the rug out from under us and does so many amazing, surprising, and gasp-worthy things. I think I cheered 8 times in this movie. I think I gasped 10 times. And there was at least one time that I was a complete and blubbering, utter mess in a brief moment between Carrie Fisher's General Leia Organa and Mark Hamill's Luke Skywalker.
It's that moment.
it's an incredible film. It's a real testament to Rian Johnson's vision that he was able to sort of integrate what they were looking for as far as what the franchise does, as well as taking it to whole new places. Adam Driver is outstanding. Daisy Ridley, again, is incredible. Oscar Isaac and John Boyega are just such a barrel of fun. And the young actress, and I'm probably going to forget her name, who plays Rose in the movie, is an absolutely incredible performer. Look, it's just, I don't know. So if this is precisely the kind of Star Wars movie that I wish every Star Wars movie could be. It expanded the myths. It expanded the awe. It smashed the myths. It had terrific performances. It led us to completely new places and unexpected places. And it was exciting and it was thrilling and it was moving. And it understands Star Wars, I believe, in a better way than any other text has approached it.
It really is amazing. The actress you're looking for is Kelly Marie Tran.
Kelly Marie Tran. She's out freaking standing. Steals the whole movie.
She does. And I was just so excited because she's also Vietnamese. I'm like, yes. Seeing yes. Asians among other people of color as main characters. It is so great. Like, it's such a, like, the cast is so diverse and it's just so nice seeing these people in a sci-fi movie because, you know, when gigs get upset that, you know, no, you know, this person isn't supposed to be a person of color. It's like, you're in space, darling. There are aliens. Get over it. It is just so nice.
It's just as likely to see a Hutt as it is an Asian in the Star Wars universe, as far as I'm concerned.
I know, right?
So anyone who even gives you that argument, you need to stop talking to them immediately and just walk away.
I know. But it's like the whole Thor thing with Idris Elba being in it. It's like, yes. He is amazing. Don't you dare try to take him out of this film.
Oh, anyone who says Idris Elba should be in anything less is an idiot. Stop talking to them immediately.
Exactly. But yeah, it's just so nice to see that. And a thing about, you know, ensemble movies, when you have so many multiple storylines, it can just become a bit of a schmuzzle. But this was like beautifully balanced, like, because you've got Finn's storyline with Rose, you've got Poe as well, kind of, they kind of separate as well. And then you've got...
Yeah, Poe's got a great story with Laura Dern's character.
Exactly.
Which is fantastic. The next chain in command in the Resistance, a phenomenal little storyline going along.
And then you've got Rey's storyline with Luke, and then they all just kind of meld together at the end. And it's like, oh, this is stunning. It's usually when you see those kind of films, you're like, oh, God, what's going on? This is a schmozzle. But beautifully balanced, and it just made sense. And visually stunning. Oh, my gosh, Blake.
Yeah, some really incredible sequences. One in particular in Supreme Leader Snoke has a sort of throne room in his massive epic First Order Star Destroyer. And it's just glorious. It looks, it's just massive, opulent red space with these incredibly beautifully designed guards in there. And it's just, it looks like something, you know, it looks like something out of sort of Italian 70s cinema, as opposed to, you know, a sort of space blockbuster. And look, you know, I just to wrap up, there's lots of different people who are going to have different opinions on this, and you know, everyone can articulate what they like or don't like, but you know, speaking as a Star Wars kid who doesn't remember ever watching anything before Star Wars, and I remember the ads from the TV that played in between the beta video recording that my dad recorded the three Star Wars films off of the television.
We're going old school here.
when I watched them hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, the one image that is like that captures, I think, every Star Wars person's imagination, but certainly captured mine, is when you see a young kid on a desert planet living with his auntie and uncle in a shithole part of the universe, looking out to a twin sunset, wishing that he could make a difference. And in this film, there's a moment like that. And it's completely different for a whole number of reasons, and then I'll let you guys find it yourselves. There's my little clue. Go and hunt this down. But when I saw that moment, I was so moved and so excited and thrilled and so confident that Rian Johnson has another Star Wars trilogy under his purview that I just couldn't be more happy with this movie. It's one of my favorite movies of the year. Easily. I saw it twice in a matter of hours.
Yeah, I don't know how you did that. Like
easily. Easily. It's everything I wanted from a Star Wars movie and more.
So happy. And the midnight screening I went to, I was sitting next to a man and his very young son. And I was just like, oh, God, kid, how are you going to stay awake? But at the same time, a kid's in his dad's lap just holding on to him every time one of the big moments came. I'm like, oh, man. to be a kid and experience this like this. Wow. Like, I missed when the original trilogy came out in cinemas. I missed that boat, and I'm like, you kid, you were a lucky kid.
Yeah. And some of us had to experience the torture of the new trilogy in cinemas, which I did at midnight every time. So you know, it's
a blight in our memory. We just do not remember those. But so Disney have really taken Star Wars to a new level here, but they've also taken over the world, it seems, Blake.
Yeah, it's crazy. So this is Disney has bought 20th Century Fox and a whole stack of their properties, which means Disney owns Alien, it owns X-Men, it owns the original theatrical releases of Star Wars, finally, which has got a lot of fans' tongues wagging. Mm. It owns The Simpsons. Disney owns, like, it is scary because right now we've got less movie releases coming to the cinema than I think we've ever had before.
Mm.
And it's a really scary prospect to think that Disney's just going to homogenize and Disney-ify everything and not have space for more adult content, because they really do shoot at a sort of PG-13 in United States parlance, or like M as the highest rated level possible, or PG. You know, they have a very sort of defined vision, but I don't know. It just feels kind of scary. It just feels like,
I mean, everyone's so excited because they're like, oh my gosh, X-Men Avengers crossover. Yay. And I'm like, yeah, but Disney owns Deadpool.
Yeah.
Disney owns Deadpool. What's going to happen there? They own The Simpsons. Like, The Simpsons, which predicted it about 17 years ago, funnily enough.
Yeah, of course they did.
Of course they did.
But yeah, I don't. Yeah, they predicted Trump. But I'm really interested in seeing this, because there was one time where one of the smaller arms of Disney, this was around the sort of Miramax stage, was helping to distribute a stack of American independent films in the 90s. And it was one of the arms of the company that eventually shut up shop. And they were just like, no, we're not doing these anymore. We're going back to sort of our bread and butter cartoons, you know, popcorn, Pixar, blah.
Mm.
But I think it's just going to be interesting. I hope the segmentation works, because, you know, I think Marvel have got their hands full with their number of characters now, and you add in X-Men and Fantastic Four, and it's just a gargantuan beast. So, how do you fit all those movies in one studio in one year and keep the quality right and keep the diversity right? You know, I think sometimes Marvel has the problem of even looking like a bit homogenized, and Pixar's, you know, a great relief because they kind of do one movie a year, if that.
Yeah.
And so they've still got, you know, a hell of a lot of creative control over their product, and it's just really interesting stuff. It's scary. I'm not happy about this. I would be much happier for 20th Century to be different and to be run differently and have a different ethos and a different culture. But being absorbed into Disney, it feels like duopoly. And I think the way that you and I would describe it is it feels like Skynet. It feels like Disney is controlling everything, and I don't know if that's a good thing.
Yeah, and then you've got little Warner Brothers just struggling along with it, DC characters. And I'm like, just hold on to them, guys. Don't ever let it go.
No, I think they're safe as far as they're still going to make money. And Warner Brothers is an interesting studio in and of itself. You know, they've got their own issues. And I mean, look, you just don't want that overarching culture, because sometimes there's the brands get diluted. You know, they become samey, and it's really difficult to keep those brands all very different and doing something unique. So I'm curious.
It's curious, but I'm also a little scared with the net neutrality laws getting repealed in the US. And it's like, does it mean Disney's going to charge extra if you're going to see any of their content?
Yes.
Insane.
It's scary. Like, the net neutrality is another scary thing. So with something great coming out like Star Wars The Last Jedi, I think, it's kind of suitably dark ending. And we have to have hope that, you know, the different states in America sue to get this net neutrality thing sorted out, that the Obama administration fixed, that Australia should be concerned. Because
we seem to follow everything that America does, even though it's run by an absolute idiot. It's like, oh, America did it, we'll do it too. It's like, no.
You said it. I agree. It's ridiculous. But no, it's a scary time. That stuff's scary, and I need to learn more. I think we need to learn more about it. But it's just trying to trying to see what the international implications of something like that are and to get it repealed. And, you know, I think the constituents in America hopefully can rally and push to make it work. Because, again, if it impacts businesses' bottom line, which it does, because it keeps lots of businesses competitive with other big places like Disney's of the world, I think it's definitely something that, you know, it's definitely something that people are going to try and work out.
Wow, we ended on a grim note, didn't we?
I know. Let's get back to the Star Wars.
Star Wars. We love Star Wars. But, Blake, 2017, heaps is coming up. We'll also have our podcast on iTunes by then.
Yes, we definitely will. And I think maybe as a teaser for the podcast, we'll definitely talk more about what our best things were of 2017 to sort of kick off before we launch in 2018. Super excited to be joining you guys for a little bit longer than our normal weekly show. But I can't wait, Soph. It's been an awesome year. Thank you.
Thank you, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, all that stuff.
Yep. Geeks of the world, happy Star Wars Christmas.
Geeks of the world, pray to Rian Johnson and the new Star Wars trilogy.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great.
All right, back. Bye.
Bye.